That task force that monitors social media to try to use data and analytics from basically public social media posts. They're trying to understand when people are organizing for criminal intent and track some of those. The ACLU has some issues with it, and they outline it in a lawsuit. They are suing the Chicago Police Department to find out more about it and may have some big problems with it. Several of you on the text line are saying that is it okay to loot and destroy businesses? Use your voice to protest is one thing. To be violent is another thing. The police need more tools. You know, Paul Vallis is on for another reason, but it's certainly relevant to what you talk about. Former candidate for mayor, we know, former CEO of the Chicago Public Schools. You're making some news all over the place, and I want to get to that. But I'm sure you've heard about this ACLU thing, Paul. What do you think about it?
Well, this is what the ACLU does. They sue you if the police use drones. They sue you if they're monitoring social media. God, I hope they're monitoring social media. I mean, if you recall the riot and the second riots that the city was in Brevard for in August, so much of that was basically a product of social media interaction. So bottom line is, you know, I understand the ACLU has its purpose, and the more they sue, the more fundraising they get. But at the end of the day, the police better be monitoring social media. And at the end of the day, the police better start using drones. You know, right now the police, for example, can't, I mean, they're limited in their ability to chase, to have vehicle traces. Well, right. You know, you can use drones to track the vehicles. Or for that matter, with these new highly restrictive rules of engagement when it comes to foot patrols, I mean, again, but the ACLU has problems with drones. So I just think you're always going to have this titanic battle, but people should not view the monitoring of social media by the police, or for that matter, the use of drone technology as something sinister. It's just another, it's the use of technology to improve public safety. And obviously, you always need to do that responsibly. But at the end of the day, people shouldn't be frightened by that.
Yeah, I'm not frightened by it. I feel like if it's out there for everyone to see, the police department should be able to see that, too, and use those tools appropriately. I think that there's a little bit of an issue with the transparency when they submit a Freedom of Information request just to try to get more information about it. I get it. There are some things that probably need to be kept to police alone because they're tactics and there are certain things. But in general, they should release, hey, this is how we're doing it. If you're trying to build trust between the police and citizenry, which we are trying to do right now, I don't think it's good to keep that entirely secret so that everyone thinks that, oh, well, are they tracking my phone? Are they tracking me outside the bounds of what normal citizens would expect? When you post something on social media, you expect people to see it, Paul, don't you?
Look, it's not like we're hiding nuclear secrets here. My approach has always been to be absolutely, completely transparent. When you're not transparent, then people start to get cynical, or they suspect you of doing certain things. So I agree with you 100%. I mean, they should be completely transparent. They shouldn't have to wait to respond to the FO. I mean, if they're using the technology properly, as I'm sure they are, then they wouldn't mind a little oversight and a little transparency. So I agree with you on that.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, and I remember back when we had social unrest is one thing, but when we had the looting and rioting and some of the more violence, the violence that broke out this summer, that's when the mayor and the police superintendent seemed to speak out in favor of these programs. They got this task force together and they said they were going to use data and technology, because some of the aldermen said that within the looting groups, there were people who specifically worked social media, and they had in advance bought U-Haul trucks. They had really prepared for this, and then they sort of participated in it in a very organized fashion. Wouldn't it have been great if police were onto that or sooner and had seen some of the posts when they were organizing? That to me seems like a fair use of a public social media post.
I agree. Or you know, even the use of drone technology. My son's a police officer. You know, I don't know to what degree they use drones in San Antonio, but he bought a drone. You know, he bought a drone and he was flying it around. It was interesting. I was working at the dinner table and the drone flew into the dinner to the table and just hovered like a bug right in front of me. But I was thinking about if you're pursuing a criminal, and you know, particularly through a crowd, or you're pursuing a car, there's a car chase. I mean, would you rather be chasing a car at 80 miles an hour or tracking that car with a drone? So there's really effective use of technology. The key here is to decide how you're going to use the technology and then to continue to refine your approach while providing the proper oversight and transparency. And when you're more willing to be transparent, you'll be amazed at how the opposition will melt away. Maybe not the ACLU. They view that as their job to question everything. And, you know, there's a place for everyone. But at the end of the day, a little transparency doesn't hurt.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Hey, you made some news here, and I want to just kind of get some clarity on it, because I saw you post on Facebook about that there is, in fact, a deal that the city's negotiating team, which you were on, if I'm not incorrect there,
yes,
has reached an agreement with the CPD, the rank and file, for a new contract.
Yeah, they did. They reached the deal last Thursday. You know, of course, the mayor has to officially sign off. Obviously, they have to bring it to the city council, as does the FOP president. He has to bring it to his, obviously, rank and file for a vote. But, yeah, we walked away that Thursday night with the understanding that we had addressed the city's concerns, and they, in turn, had addressed the FOP's concerns, and that we had a contract. You know, the mayor's initial response that it's news to her. It shouldn't have been. They were in constant communication with the budget director and CFO, constantly taking a pause to basically confer. And then, of course, a couple of days later, they denied that they had reached an agreement. Well, her negotiating team had reached an agreement. And, of course, John announced that, John Catanzara, the FOP president, the day after announced that they had reached an agreement with the team, while not offering the details. And of course, yesterday at Great America was Family Day for the police officers. He did announce the details of the agreement. Now it's up to the mayor. It's up to the mayor, and it's up to the city council to ratify that agreement. But I mean, it's her negotiating team, and we think that it's a balanced agreement, and an agreement that addresses the financial needs of the police, that gives them their long-awaited retro pay, and gives them reasonable salary increases. And then at the same time addresses some of the city's concerns relative to accountability. The accountability provisions are very consistent with the accountability provisions that were in the sergeant's contract that was approved by the city council. So I think it's a very fair contract, and it's long overdue.
Yeah, long overdue. How long has it been, Paul?
It's been four years. And look, I mean, are there public servants who have worked harder or longer hours or have had more days canceled off than the police department? I mean, 40% of the police department contracted COVID. They've been, because of the increasing shortages, you've had the police officers constantly going to these like 10, 12, 14 work days with no days off, all days off canceled. And of course, these 12-hour consecutive work days, and these 12-hour work days.
Right, which 12 on, 12 only, off is what they were doing, and still
12,
are, if 12 I'm not.
On, 12 off, mm-hmm. Which are not only punishing to the police officers, but punishing to the families. What about these fathers and mothers who have children at home? So it's very, very trying. And, you know, another police officer committed suicide 2 days ago. So the suicide rate among Chicago police officers is 60% higher than the national average. And don't think for a second that the stress of the job and just the punishment that has been inflicted upon them, the at least perception of the lack of support, but also these long days and these long hours, it takes its toll. It's not the type of job that lends itself to decades-long marriages, so to speak, you know, because it's a very trying, stressful job.
No, there's no doubt about it. And you're right, 12 hours on, 12 hours off for that many days with canceled days off. I mean, you think about anybody working those, that's tough. You think about the importance of a police officer always doing the right thing, not making a mistake. And you put them under those conditions, and it starts to become a very difficult scenario for the city to expect, for the police department to expect that can continue and that everything will be okay. Concerns about that. You know, hey, I want to dig into this just a little bit, Paul. We're going to pause for just a second. You got a few more minutes for me?
I do.
All
absolutely.
Right. Hang on for a second. Paul Vallis, you know him. He's a former, he formerly ran for mayor. He's the former head of the Chicago Public Schools. He was central to the negotiations here with this new police contract. The mayor still needs to sign off on it, as you just heard him talk about. And the city council does, too. But looks like it is just about done. More on that in a moment here on WGN. Paul Vallis is on with us here. Paul, remind me, you've got several members of police officers in your family. And is your wife retired now? Is she still a police officer?
No, she's not. She works at TSA. And my oldest son was a police officer, but now he's a firefighter. And my middle son is a police officer in San Antonio.
Mm-hmm. How did you get involved with the police contract negotiations? This has been going on for 4 years. I mean, like, you know, if they got a deal, good, because it's been a long time coming. How did you get involved with the whole thing?
Well, I was approached by the president, John Catanzara, who asked me to join the negotiating team. I agreed to do so, but I told him that I couldn't take compensation, or I would not take compensation, because I didn't want anybody to question my motives. And I wanted to have, obviously, a degree of independence so that I could basically tell like it is. You know, not that if I would have received compensation, I wouldn't have told it like it was. But mm-hmm. I really felt that, you know, given just the controversies out there involving the negotiations and things like that, I wanted to be, you know, I didn't want anybody to question my objectivity. And obviously, I've had a long-standing relationship with some of the people on the city side. Jim Francik, for example, who has been the city's chief negotiator on all these contracts for well over two decades, negotiated my contracts when I was city budget director and at the Chicago Public School. So it was like a gathering of old colleagues, so to speak. And so it was a good... It helped improve the communication. And, you know, there was some misinformation being put out that, oh, the FOP wasn't serious. Or let me tell you something. I myself, since last October, have, like, exchanged over 100 emails with the city, with the city's negotiating team, and have had twice that many telephone conversations about issues revolving around the contract. So we've been in constant negotiation, the FOP and the FOP president has been determined to get this contract done, and we've been determined to get it done in a way that the city can afford it. Because the absolute worst thing you can do is to pass a contract that you can't afford and then have the city not fill police vacancies like they've been failing to do. You know, there's a lot of other issues out there, but this is a sound agreement, and hopefully the mayor will agree with her negotiating team, and obviously the city council will follow suit.
So help us understand that, because you posted to Facebook, Paul Vallis. I'm looking at your Facebook page right mm-hmm. now. The real facts on the FOP contract negotiations. FOP is correct.
Yes.
FOP reached an agreement with the city's negotiating team on a contract, contrary to repeated claims, and you go on and then you detail some of the details of the contract. Why is this so back and forth? Why isn't there an announcement now? Why aren't we seeing this in all the papers and being pushed out everywhere? Has the mayor still, is she not sure she's going to sign off on it?
Oh, you know, I don't know. Maybe maybe they're upset that John said something ahead of the mayor or whatever. Obviously, the relationship has been a frosty one, to say the least. But at the end of the day, you know, the FOP president has an obligation because we're talking about going on 4 years. We're beyond 4 years of a contract not being awarded, and with all the things that the police are putting up with. I mean, the FOP coming out and simply saying that we've got an agreement, obviously pointing out that it still needs to be approved and ratified, and then not putting out any details, I didn't think was preempting anyone. Sometimes, you know, you got to get your messages right. But hopefully cooler heads will prevail and we'll get this thing approved and ratified. So, you know, it's a solid contract and long overdue. And what it will do, quite frankly, is it'll allow the police officers to get their retro pay. You know, in other words, all this pay that they should have gotten the last 4 years when they did not receive a contract, they would now get retroactively. And that not only includes retro pay on their base pay, but also on overtime and things like that. But the real good part of this contract is we won't now suddenly be waiting another 3 years or 4 years to get another contract. So what they did was they passed an 8-year contract, which addresses the 4-year retro, the 4 years that they did not have a contract and deals with the money that is owed to the police. But it also then extends the contract another 4 years, actually another 3.5 years. and it provides them with reasonable salary increases over that period of time. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll have labor peace and stability. The cops will have gotten the money that they're owed, and they'll know over the next few years they're going to get these steady pay increases. Hopefully it'll be a boost to morale, and hopefully it'll help the police department with their recruiting efforts, because, as you know, there's been a huge exodus. There's been a record number of police retirements, and districts are getting strapped. There's districts that have lost 15, 20, 25% of their officer strength, and that's a very dangerous thing. So hopefully it'll help. That stability will help with the recruitment and retention efforts.
Yeah, you hope so. In addition to just sort of the sheer numbers of police, I also understand, and you do too, and appreciate that experience matters. Having covered crime for a very long time in my career, it always seems to work well when you have teams who are of varying levels of experience, but you don't want folks all fresh out of the academy all working together, because they learn from some of the older officers. And if you have this mass retirement, it's not always a good thing to just have entirely, you know, a force full of younger officers. Some of that can be good. They may be, I've heard this said, that they may be more amenable to some of the reforms and learning it the new way. But in terms of the sheer experience of the job, that certainly comes also in, that also comes in handy.
Well, yeah, and there's been obviously a lot of controversy over the clearance rates and the inability to clear these cases. You know, the superintendent puts out stats saying 50% clearance rates on murders. Well, they count all the murders that have been cleared involving cases going back multiple years, and then they apply that number against the murders this year, and they say 50%. The actual number of murders cleared this year is 18%, a little over 18%, and that's 50% down, 50% fewer cleared murder cases than last year. And I can't help but think that that's due to a combination of, number one, severe shortage of detectives. We have maybe half the number of detectives as a percentage of the police force, we have half the number of detectives than a city like New York, or for that matter, Los Angeles has. So we have a severe shortage of detectives, and sometimes detectives are pulled to do patrol duty because of the shortages in other areas. And not only do we have half the number of detectives that we probably need, but we also have probably the most inexperienced detective corps than we have ever had. So those combinations are really that, in the absence of support programs like a witness protection program, a victims protection program, to basically help the detectives be able to protect their witnesses and encourage people to come and testify. Those things in combination have hurt the police. So it's common sense. Let's get this contract done. Let's fill these vacancies. Let's rebuild our detective corps. Let's have a legitimate witness protection program so that the police can basically protect individuals who are cooperating with them in the community. And let's give them a fair pay increase. When you consider that 40% of the cops got COVID this year, and, you know, they couldn't quarantine. When cops came in contact with other people who had COVID, they didn't quarantine. They didn't quarantine for 15 days, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we had another large profession out there that literally, you know, did not go to work physically, you know, outside their remote work for a better part of 12 months. We know that well with the closing of the schools, but yet the cops have gone to work every day with COVID, rain or shine, with no pay increase, and with the 12-hour work days, and sometimes working 10, 12 days in a row without a day off. And so they deserve a fair contract, and I think this is one, and hopefully the mayor and the city council will support it.
Well, hope there'll be some news soon. It does sound to me from you, and you were central to negotiations, that this is getting done. And I'd also add that there aren't many other unions that have worked 4 years without a contract. You don't see that all that often. You see strikes and other things, but the police, I don't think, are allowed to even strike. That's not even a choice they could make. So here we are.
They're not, but Anna, this is really important. They could easily have done blue flu. Look, you know, as you know, I've been a big critic of the Chicago Teachers Union. You know, the last three times they threatened to strike, they didn't have the legal justification to do so. But they basically told the district that, you know, we're not going to go to school, or we're telling our members not to go to school because schools are dangerous places. Well, you know, I mean, one could argue that the police department could have done the same thing, but the officers did not. They could have done the blue, but they did not, to their credit. And to the credit of the union president, he did not encourage them to do that.
Yeah.
So
I respect that decision. I got to run, though, Paul. Thank you for the time today.